listening to WQED's Voice of the Arts podcast. I'm Emily Bruner, and today we have the Artistic Director of Corning Works here, Beth Corning. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
All right, so we're here to talk about your upcoming production that's running March 15th to March 24th at the Lilly Theater of City Theater on the South Side, and it is called What Did You Think You Just Heard Me Say? Exclamation point, question mark. So, Beth, what is this show about?
Exactly what the title says. I think almost everybody who hears the title laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that the show is really about what we're living these days, that we have so much information coming at us by your phone or by your phone or by your phone or by the radio or by your phone or your computer or WhatsApp or messaging or you name it, we are inundated. And many of us, whether we're in a relationship with somebody, whether it's a partner, a child, a colleague, or whatever, we have knee-jerk reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And we listen through our own veils, whether that's our gender, our upbringing, whether you've had a good relationship with this person or a bad one or however you perceive it. It's all interpretation. And that's always been the case. This is not something new. Mm-hmm. But because we have been so inundated, I think it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, or more and more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so people read headlines in newspapers. This is my favorite one. Or people read the things on Facebook, right? And there'll be a headline, and they don't bother to read the text. They don't bother to read what other people have written. And they are outraged because the headline was outraged. But that's not what the article was about.
Right.
But we're already outraged, and we're already proselytizing or reacting. And this goes to even, you have a partner who says something and you react and that person says, what did you think I just said to you? What did you hear?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I can say I have. I either have stopped listening or I realize that I'm listening through very particular ears. And then so I forget exactly what. Oh, I know exactly what did. I was having a conversation with a friend and this person had a certain reaction and I was dumbfounded.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, what?
Yeah.
And I got off the phone with them and I did what most people do. Either you react or you just don't. You just sort of walk away going, well, that was screwed up. And then I remember thinking, okay, this is not good.
Mm.
What in our relationship of X number of decades did I ever do that?
Right.
And of course, it usually comes back to a me-centric situation rather than, boy, that person's having a bad day.
Mm.
Or I wonder what they really heard, right? So then this started getting into my head and suddenly you're inundated with it every single time you turn around,
mm-hmm.
whether or not you can't hear somebody. And as all those of us that are getting older, what did you say? Cardboard? No, carport. Oh, what? Or you're good, whatever. So it came about that way.
Yeah.
And so the show is kind of facing that fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you turn, because a lot of what you're describing is communication. It's words, it's text, it's talking. How did you turn that into a dance piece?
Well, it's interesting because I often mix text with my works.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because we just did a showing in New York and of the rehearsal. And one person who's a dancer that was watching said, I was really shocked. There's not a lot of text in this. And I said, okay. And he said, but it's really fascinating. It's really funny and it's really fascinating. And I suddenly get it. And I went, okay, what do you get? What do you think you just heard me say? Or what? And he said, it's all interpretation, isn't it? And I said, yep. And so whoever's listening to this podcast right now, you're hearing whatever it is you're hearing me say. You have a picture in your head. You're already going to the situations you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this, if you see me do something, if I look a certain way, if I do something, if I make a gesture, if I hug you and you didn't want to be hugged. I mean, that's all movement, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you interpret that? As you, as the audience, how are you listening? What are you listening to? What are you hearing? What do you see? Why are you interpreting it that way? You know, we set it up. I mean, the work that I do is not particularly abstract or esoteric. So it's all human, and particularly the level of artists that I encompass or engage are just extraordinary. It's easy enough to let this rain, because these are consummate seasoned performers that with one gesture you go, oh, okay, got it.
And speaking of performers, who are you collaborating with? Who's in the show with you?
Alberto Del Saz, who is a beautiful dancer, who danced with a company by the name of Alwyn Nikolai Murray Lewis, and was with them for years, and is now actually in charge of all their works historically. Wow. The other person is Claire Porter, who is, I say her name and I start to smile because her work is funny. Her work is witty. And she has always been a solo artist for most of her career. And so she's been called the Charlie Chaplin of dance. And the third person is Evan Fisk, who actually doesn't quite fit the Glue Factory projects, which I guess we should explain what those are.
Yeah.
But Evan is, somebody said, how come Evan got to get in? This person was a younger artist. I said, well, he's a Glue Factory performer in training. He performed in the season last year. If anybody who's listening saw it, he was the lover in the Fisherman, the Butterfly, Eve and Her Lover, a parable, which was the performance last season.
Yeah. So talk about Glue Factory, you said?
Yeah, the Glue Factory project. So glue was historically made out of horses' hooves and particularly retired racehorses. And so I started in 2000 a series called the Glue Factory Projects, which were for internationally and nationally renowned performers over the age of 40. Because in the dance world, if you're over 40, you should be a retired racehorse. And I always thought, having a good part of my career in Europe, that women were not asked to retire until 42 and men later than that. And I remember I was in my late 20s, early 30s then, and I just remember going, every 40-year-old dancer I looked at, I said, that's what I want to look like. I want to dance like them. And I knew it. I couldn't understand why. So fast forward, and I became 40 a while ago. And so I realized that even though I had had a professional company with younger dancers, I missed dancing with people my own age. I realized I was suddenly the older member, and they were the younger people. I became their boss rather than a colleague. And also because I realized that I was more interested in subtle and subtleties and nuances that 20-year-olds can't bring to the game. They can't. They can do incredible leaps and turns and air-defying and speed-defying, gravity-defying movement. But if I want one small gesture, if I want somebody to turn and make a turn, a 40, 50, 60-plus-year-old dancer who has all this information, this physical information in their body and life experience in their body, to me that was far more moving. And I sat in the audience, and not only did I know that not only I as somebody who'd been in the field for decades, but I would look and I'd ask other people who were just audience members, who were seasoned audience people. And I said, when you watch this kind of group of people, tell me how you feel. And everybody had the same response one way or the other, which is, oh, subconsciously I relax because I realize they know what they're doing. There is a security, there is a something on there that is palpable, that takes often the place of spectacular leaps. And so we may not be doing spectacular leaps, but I gotta tell you, the stuff that these artists are doing is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it sounds very spectacular. And it just showcases the beauty and grace of dancers of that age.
There's I don't know what that word means, really, grace. I think again, you interpret the Grace. I think it was flowing gowns. But they're solid.
Yeah.
These are, and not that 20-year-olds aren't solid. And I work with younger dancers occasionally, yeah. and they're stunning, beautiful. But for the kinds of themes that I'm making in these works, I need a little bit something a little bit deeper.
Yeah, deeper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have a guest choreographer as well.
Yes, thank you for. Yeah. Boy. Yes, thank you. Victoria Marks, who is a colleague and a very esteemed choreographer, did a piece called Dancing to Music. And it's historically for four women. And when I was the executive director of the Dance Alloy Theater here, I commissioned her to set this work, which I had known about, and she had created it in 1988. So, you know, much later, I'd sort of say, can I purchase that for the Dance Alloy? And we did it. I loved it. Mm. It is a tour de force, and frankly, very moving for audiences and death-defying for the performers, as it is counts for 11 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And albeit every dance counts or sings a phrase or every, it is the great organizer. You know, you have to, what count are you on?
Right.
You, what phrase are we on? It's like, it's musical. It's, you have to count things out. You need to know how long it takes, not only just the steps, but
yeah.
how are we going to do this? Anyway, I suddenly thought to myself, I usually don't bring in other people's choreography necessarily in these evenings. Sometimes I have, but I suddenly went, I know that piece. And that is going to be that last exclamation mark, that last question mark, that last, you get it?
Yeah.
Do you understand me now? So I brought Vicky in. She graciously and generously allowed me to do it for two men and two women. Mm. And it has never been done with that mixed gender before. And it's a very different piece, obviously, because you read it differently.
Right.
The viewer interprets it differently.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that sounds really impactful, really cool.
It is. It's kind of great.
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
And how long is this piece total?
Usually these are about 60 minutes, no intermissions.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
so they're full length productions. It's they're I would call them non-linear vignettes, but they are all sewn together. It's not a piece and a piece and a piece. It's not a repertory work, so to speak. It is a full evening. You walk in and you're there till the end, and most people never realize they've been there for an hour.
Yeah,
so it's goes fast. And these intimate side spaces. We're at the Lilly Theater, which we pulled down now to seating only 50.
Wow.
And we were there last season, and I loved it, and I chose it again for this work. I want people. I need for you to be there. I need for you to feel that you are engaged, that you are not just sitting there watching this on a screen or something. You can feel us. You can hear us. You can almost touch us.
Yeah.
So, it's very intimate and I love it.
Yeah. No, that sounds like a great way to experience dance and experience this piece in particular.
Yeah.
Because it's in your face and you can't ignore it.
Yeah. It's there. And it's thankfully the people who saw it in New York really thought it was funny.
Oh, good.
Which was good because I was thinking it was rather melancholy, but those of us up there are experiencing something maybe a little bit different, which is great.
Right. That's the whole point, is to experience something different. So.
Yes, it is. And my hope is that when people leave, they have a lot to talk about, but they're going to talk about it very carefully.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think someone will go, what do you really mean by that? How did you see that?
Yeah, much deeper conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Is there anything else you want to touch upon about this amazing production?
I hope it's amazing. I'm working with beautiful people and set design by Steffi Mayer Stolle, lighting design by Ian Court. Mm. I have wonderful people who have helped bring this together. And I love the process.
Yeah.
The process is kind of grand, working with these kind of people. And it shows. I mean, I think the audience can feel it when they're there. And it actually starts a little bit in the lobby if you come early, which is a fabulous lobby, by the way. If you've never been to the City Theater, you really ought to come. And yes, there's parking on the street, free parking on the street, all sorts of places around there. And yes, it's safe. down there, and there is valet parking, limited valet parking by City Theater, which you can drive up and just ask if there's still space, if you can get there early enough. It's great fun. And there are two Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock. The rest of them are all at 8. Mm-hmm. And the first Sunday, which is the 17th, is a pay what you can at the door. And you can reserve tickets as well online. It's come. I'd love to share this with people. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what you just heard me say.
Sounds like a great conversation starter for the community.
I'm hoping so. I think most people walk away from a Corning Works production talking, but this one I'd like to think that they're doing so laughing.
Mm-hmm. Doing so laughing. Yeah. I love that. Humor to bring us together.
Yeah, we sure could use it.
Yeah, we sure could use it, especially now. Well, that's amazing. It's going to be March 15th through the 24th at the Lilly Theater at City Theater. It is called What Did You Think You Just Heard Me Say? With a lot of exclamation points and question marks. Beth Corning, thank you so much for coming and talking with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.